All right, my friends, welcome to Dropping the Ball. I'm Andrew, and with me today is my co-host, Luke. How you doing today, Luke?
We're back.
We are back.
And maybe 2021 will shine upon us with just unmatched splendor and joy.
Lots of listeners and downloads as well.
Yeah, that would be nice. Or at least just, you know, around where 2019 was, you know?
Nice. Yeah, you know, let's go backwards in time.
Let's just call this one 2020.
Yeah, that I you know, maybe we can have a restart.
Let's just remove. We'll carry over, you know, results of elections or whatever. But like then, let's just call this 2020 from here on out. That'd be great.
Yeah, and you know, I said we want to go backwards in time, and today's episode we'll do that in a sense. We've got a really great topic that we want to cover that I think many of our fans are going to get really excited about because. Yeah. As we head into 2021, guess what's right around the corner? 2022. I know that's silly to say, but that means the World Cup is coming.
Yeah. I think that we're rolling up on a lot of big international tournaments. The Confederation Cups and stuff like that got canceled this year are going to be playing next year. So we're going to see a lot of national teams. In this already super busy soccer schedule, really playing a lot of football. So it's going to be a good year for a soccer fan.
Go Toffees.
Go Toffees, says Andrew. Look at them go. Second in the table. Are they still second in the table?
Yeah. They are second in the table.
That's incredible.
Hopefully by the end of this week, we will either be tied for first or at least still second in the table.
Yeah.
Now, we're not here to talk about the English Premier League, though, as much as we would love to.
Not directly.
We're here to talk about the excitement surrounding USA Soccer.
Yep.
And for those that follow, that's not something that's really come out of our mouths very often and yeah. Definitely not recently, given our woes the last time.
Well, yeah, and if you were a fan of you know, I'm 32, you're 32, so we kind of got into it probably, I mean, around 2000, a lot of us at the best. I mean, we maybe 98, if you were into the World Cup 98, there was a pretty cool N64 video game, so you'd probably... You know, would try and play as the USA or something like that on that. But since that period, there's been a lot of ups and downs and a lot of stuff that's happened. And most recently, the disappointment of not going to the 2018 World Cup. So,
and that was an epitome of U.S. soccer,
right? And I think that could have maybe turned a lot of people off to the U.S. men's national team after that, and they're not really paying attention much with what's going on. But this is an episode to revive that.
Because now's not the time to give up on U.S.
No,
soccer.
No, because now we're actually starting to see a lot of very interesting young talent coming through and stepping into an atmosphere that all of our U.S. men's national team, most of our U.S. men's national team players before this, weren't really capable of doing. But we're not going to get to that yet. We want to go backwards now.
We'll talk about the bad first, and we'll finish on the high note.
To the very, very beginning of the U.S. men's national team.
Yes, so the U.S. national team, they didn't start off as a disappointment. The first ever World Cup was, what, 1930? And
yeah.
They made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, they were actually finished third overall.
But we've never come close to those type of results since. And one thing that I found interesting while we were doing our research for this was that the U.S. is in a class of very few in the fact that it made it to 7 World Cups in a row.
Yeah.
And that's only happened to 7-8 other international teams. Yeah. The problem is, great, you get there, and then you just shit the bed in catastrophic manner multiple times.
Yeah, this is really true. So I guess kind of the way that it worked was, like you said, you know, that 1930 deal started off really solid. We qualified for the next 2 World Cups, so, you know, 30, 34... 38, but of course in 1938 there was, you know, the Second World War, and was there actually a 42? There might not have been because of the war, so I don't think that they would have had those two. But then we qualified for 1950 World Cup and had a huge upset. I think it was called the Miracle on Turf or something like that, and it's our upset of England, and then it would be 4 decades into 1990 before we would qualify again. So I guess
did you say 40 years?
Yeah, I guess soccer kind of stopped being popular in the United States around then? It kind of seems, I don't know what changes like that. You know, what changes in a place where you would go from being pretty competitive in a sport to then just being like, eh, for 40 years?
I guess it would have to do with the development of soccer in the other countries too.
Yeah.
I mean, they got significantly better. Yeah. And it's also attributes to why, even to this day, we still aren't on the same level playing field because of our infrastructure that they developed during those 40 years that we just decided, we'll just keep taking these best college athletes and putting them out there.
Excuse us, we are inventing our own sports.
Correct. we're inventing the real football. Yeah,
we're inventing a whole new sport and calling it football. Or, you know, some of the greatest ever periods of baseball history are through these 40 years too.
That is correct.
And basketball was a huge emerging thing on the upswing. So I guess that maybe it has a big part of it. These other three sports just came along and
decimated soccer.
Yeah, at least in the U.S. I mean, it kept on being the most popular. But then our other sports began to move into those other countries and become the second and first most popular sports as well sometimes.
Yeah, so it's interesting when you think about all of that. But then we get back to 1990,
yeah,
and we qualified again, which was great. Yeah. You know, in 88, right before we had qualified for 90, and maybe this gave us a little bit of a boost to do better, we the FIFA declared that the U.S.'s bid for the 94 World Cup was accepted. So
yeah, that's huge.
No matter what, we were guaranteed a spot for that. Yeah. And so that was beneficial to us. But I think that kind of lit a fire into our ability to make it to the 1990, and they actually would have made it anyways.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where at least we did what we should. We didn't just take the, you know, can I have some more please?
Yeah,
and
like
you know,
South Africa.
Right. Now we made it in 94, you know, after beating Colombia, which was a big time thing. And, you know, being
really
fourth
good
in the world.
The guy who scored the own goal in that game actually got shot to death in Colombia afterwards.
Which is wild.
Surprise.
And then we ultimately lost to the champ in Brazil. And that's kind of a reoccurring theme in a lot of our disappointment is we just can't beat the champs.
Yeah.
We've lost to the champs a lot of different times throughout this throughout our time in that. And so, you know, then what, 98?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we lost all of the group stage matches. And that was no good. At the time, our team captain, John Harkes, who the head coach had named captain for life after his crucial role in getting us qualified, you know, he got cut. And that is not what you expect from your international team. Like, oh, yeah, he's captain for life.
Yeah.
Snip, snip, see you later.
Yeah, like, it was because
some of you who have watched a pretty good bit, you know who Eric Winalda is. He's around for a lot of the U.S. national team conversations. He's
right
on our television stuff. Apparently, Harkes was having an affair with Winalda's wife, so that
pretty much chopped the locker room in half.
And come on,
up
man.
The World Cup, you know, and the team was probably divided, and so we lost all three of our group stage games. And
you know, if we had a soundboard, which one day we will, that would be one of those times where I press a little button and it does some crazy sound. Like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
That was your teammate.
Exactly. So I guess then that was sort of us through about when our age group at 10 years old started following soccer.
Right.
You know, that was probably us.
We introduced soccer into our lives as on an affair.
Yeah, yeah. So, and on
no wonder I felt dirty for years watching it.
And on complete and total failure. So, then around this time frame, this is when we start like the period of increased expectations and increased disappointment. So we really didn't have much of a reason to be
it's like,
all that.
Great. I'm so excited only to get let down in such glorious fashion.
I mean, in the 90s, everybody was for sure like, okay, yeah, soccer. We got a huge soccer tournament in the U.S. Okay, well, this is interesting. And then 98, there's definitely going to be some carryover from that. Pretty big disappointment. So in 2002, Bruce Arena led the U.S. to its first quarterfinal since 1930. So that's pretty good. We were finally moving in a positive direction. We upset Portugal with Cristiano Ronaldo, I believe, at that point was already there playing. Very young, though. Drew with the host country, South Korea, who eventually made it to the semifinals. And we really should have beat Poland, but we lost. But we got through anyway. So We ended up beating Mexico 2-0 in our first meeting with them at a World Cup, and the win was secured by our two most talented players at that point, Brian McBride. Everybody has a memory of him through there, who had featured at clubs like Wolfsburg and Preston North End and would go on to appear
for Everton and Fulham.
Yeah.
And then Landon Donovan, who tried to succeed at Bayern Munich and
Bayer Leverkusen and Everton.
The original Captain America.
Right. Throughout his career, he tried to go over to Europe quite a bit, but he was always just better suited for a career in the MLS. We were actually talking about this the other day, where it was like, it wasn't that he didn't want to go over there. He just really liked being really good at his sport in his country, you know? So
it's kind of like something my dad always told me about high school athletics and playing for all these travel ball teams. Why go join a team of people that are as good or better than you when you can stand out on the teams that you're on?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make more sense?
That's his mentality for sure, especially if you've got a high level of exposure, right? He was getting there were a lot of people watching him play in the MLS, and he was scoring a lot of goals, and his goal-to-game ratio is really good. So, like, you know, why does he need to go over there? And so then in that one, 2002, in the quarterfinals, we faced Germany and lost that, expectedly 1-0, but it was a great fight, and we actually had a handball by Greg Berhalter scored that was overturned, and Greg Berhalter is now our U.S. national team coach, but we almost drew with him and would have gone into extra time, but lost to Germany. Not the most embarrassing thing in 2002, for sure.
No, not at all. And going into it, not to say that expectations weren't high.
Right.
I think at this point, after such a dismal past for the most part, the expectations are realistic among most USA soccer fans. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want them to win. And boy, oh boy, we've celebrated some great wins. But when they lose, I'm disappointed for a very short period of time, and within 24 hours, I'm like, well, I kind of expected it. So if it wasn't now, it would have been later.
Right, and you know, and through there, everybody would have had a team that they enjoyed watching probably the most, and then also the United States. That's what a lot of us always did.
Right.
You'd be like, I'm also pulling for Belgium, or I'm also pulling
for Holland. I like pulling for Netherlands, because at the time, I really liked their kits.
Yeah, those solid orange kits are fly. You know, whatever. You'd have another team. You wouldn't be just pulling for that.
Correct. So, you know, heading into 2006, that tournament, you know, there was a lot of hope.
Sure.
You had people like Donovan, McBride. Then you had Captain Claudio Reyna.
Yep.
And a current national team coach, Greg Berhalter.
Yeah.
So those were kind of nearly the household names at that point. Everyone started to know who they were, at least. And then they ended up being joined by the likes of one of my all-time favorites, Tim Howard, Oguchi Onyewu, Carlos Bocanegra, Stephen Chirundolo, DeMarcus Beasley, and Clint Dipsey.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
In our notes, that is a mouthful.
That's a mouthful. Those are some names. Onyewu and Chirundolo, boy, they're definitely they were two pretty good players too. They were, but really Onyewu was the one that was everybody's favorite name to say.
Right, as you can tell, it took me a little time to get that one out.
But yeah, they were all kind of on European rosters. They were featuring, maybe not like one would expect, but they were definitely on those bigger rosters. I think Onyewu not too long after was on like AC Milan, and you know there were definitely some. Tim Howard was at Manchester United at that point, and then moved on to Everton. Dempsey was at Fulham, I believe. DeMarcus Beasley was playing in Germany, I think. And this whole kind of being on a European roster but not really playing probably impacted our success, you know, because our most talented guys weren't exactly brimming with match fitness. I mean, they were playing in a foreign country, but they were just sitting on the bench.
Right. They were learning systems, but they weren't learning the physique.
Right, yeah. They were not prepared to play these guys that were starters.
Yeah, so when you had these guys on our team, you at least now start to see ability.
Sure.
The talent level is there, just maybe to your point again, not the physique and the stamina to be able to get through these games, because again, then they're going to have to turn around and come on the international stage and actually be able to play against these cats, and they haven't really been doing that.
They weren't ever as cohesive as they could have been. You know, they always looked like they were just kind of a little bit robotic and through here.
Right, and so, you know, as a result, the best result we had at the time was a 1-1 draw with eventual champs, again, reoccurring theme, to Italy.
Yeah.
And then they ultimately just went crashing out in the group stages, and Clint Dempsey did show that his role as a future star, you know, could be there by scoring a goal, our only goal of the tournament in the final match against Ghana.
Right.
But we lost anyways. And I vividly remember that one.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that game. You know, I remember that entire ultimate letdown is really what that was. And so we still lost anyways. And then at that point, that's when he had Bob Bradley. Bob Bradley took over for Arena. And then things looked a little positive again. Yeah. We won the 2007 Gold Cup, which isn't an easy task.
Yeah, and it's basically the North American international. It's like the Euros for North America. So it's a pretty big deal. I mean, we're beating some pretty good teams. Honduras and places like that are always around. Mexico's good. So.
And then this ultimately got us to that bid to be able to play in the World Cup warm-up tournament, the 2009 Confederations Cup.
Right.
And that's where we ultimated to the final by beating Spain,
the
world number one. That was a huge game. Yeah. I remember that. And it was our first appearance in a FIFA final. And then we ultimately lost to Brazil.
No
and you got to think about in that time, yeah, 2006 I mean, Brazil. you're playing the number one, which is Spain, and then had to turn right back around and arguably play the other team that could have been the number one with Ronaldo and Brazil.
The real Ronaldo.
The real Ronaldo.
Who is now known as Fat Ronaldo.
And not to say anything ill against Cristiano, because he's the best soccer player in the world, but...
He is Cristiano Ronaldo.
He is Cristiano Ronaldo, not just Ronaldo. And so after that, you know, we lost to Mexico in the 2009 Gold Cup final in qualifications for 2010 World Cup. Jozy Altidore, one of our... biggest household names that kind of started to get onto the stage, who's still relevant on the current squad.
Yeah, still around it for sure.
And what's crazy is he's only 31 years old. Yeah. And so when you think about still some of the best players in the world, like he's got a lot to go if he can keep it up. And then, you know, at the 2010 World Cup, we were drawn with England, Slovenia, and Algeria.
Right.
And we drew two games, and then we beat Algeria. In the round of 16, Ghana came back to haunt us by knocking us out 2-1.
Yeah, so Ghana again. And that's a reoccurring theme in through here. We're going to see a lot of these same teams. You know, we've been knocked out by Brazil. We've been hurt by or lost to Brazil in the cup final. We've been knocked out by Germany. We've been knocked out by Ghana. You know, it's kind of funny how these same names kind of
they're just so fast.
Out. Yeah.
And so the positive of all of this is this sounds kind of bleak when you lead up to it, but the positive was at the end of all of this, the U.S. was now ranked internationally.
Yeah, not like 35th.
Right, they were 12th. I mean, that's not top 10, but that's still an incredible feat. And so that's now we're starting to get excited about U.S. soccer.
Yeah.
But after losing another final of Gold Cup 2011 edition, Bradley was replaced by Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yeah, so and with Klinsmann, his job was to help us break that ceiling, you know?
It right.
Was like we couldn't quite get beyond that, and he was a legend, a European player, a German who had played at places like Tottenham and was very successful in Germany. So we wanted that now to be our standard, not just kind of a guy who's coaching the MLS or a guy who's coached college in the United States or those kind of things, because that was what it was in the past. Now it was time for us to bring in somebody that can carry a different culture into this group. So he spoke openly about how the U.S. were not prepared to really face top-level talent yet. And sure, we had players that were in Europe, like we've already talked about, but very few of them were able to really succeed other than some of our best players were always goalkeepers. It was Casey Keller and Tim Howard and guys like that. So Donovan, our most famous player, was happily starring in the MLS, but he was racking up great numbers there, but had a super long, I think it was like a multi-year scoreless streak for our World Cup stage. So it showed the void in the talent that we had, and an incredibly large workload was placed on a guy like Dempsey, who was our best player in through here, and maybe not the star because Donovan was just a more well-known figure and was playing in the MLS, not at Fulham, like what our guy Dempsey was. So we did end up winning the 2013 CONCACAF tournament and easily qualified for 2014 World Cup. But it was pretty clear that many of the MLS vets didn't really like the message that Klinsmann was preaching, especially when he brought up the the five German Americans to the World Cup, some of which are still around a bit, but some of them not so much. And the most popular was this 19-year-old Julian Green, who I remember was like at the Bayern Munich Academy, and he was really talented. And he and these other four German Americans were thrown into this and knocked out some of the more experienced MLSers. And it upset a lot of their teammates and other MLS guys because they felt like they were being replaced by unproven talent. Now, sure they were, but it was about culture more so than about actual talent and through there. And people were kind of beginning to doubt Klinsmann, despite the fact that it seemed like he was making the right decisions.
Well, because when you look at international soccer, it is a culture.
Yeah.
I mean, when you compare international soccer, especially European soccer, to, say, an American sport, you can't put soccer in the same, but then you can kind of look more of our baseball system. You know, baseball, you really have a huge travel ball presence. You've got all of these, like, big-time names playing, you know, huge games at a very young age. You know, you've got, yes, the high school kind of level is still prominent and relevant. You see, you know, superstars not teaming up, but it just, they so happen to play together throughout their lifetimes, their careers. Then you have the minor leagues, the major leagues. You have all of the additional, you know, prospect leagues and things like that. So comparatively speaking, Klinsmann was trying to say that we need to get to that type of level if we want to be relevant.
Yeah, and if you want a little bit more information about kind of how things are structured over there, go check out our Liverpool Against the World. In the first half of that, we actually do a big summary of what European soccer really is and how it's structured. And when we say, you know, your sport is your life here in the United States, it's very literally that your sport is your life over there playing soccer. So that's really kind of the type of thing that he was trying to bring.
Yeah, and so you had a little bit of controversy heading into the 2014 World Cup because of this kind of mindset that half the soccer world was excited about and the other half was, you know, kind of like, no, I like my players.
A forced,
you know,
culture changes.
The
painful.
MLS is great. It's not, and it never has been, and it probably won't ever be. But things looked great until we got the draw of the 2014 World Cup.
The draw didn't look great.
And we were put in probably one of the hardest groups of the last four or five World Cups.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. And they really did us dirty. They put us with Germany, who was a top 10 team.
Yeah.
They put us with Portugal, who was a top 5 team.
Yeah.
And then they put us with our favorites, Ghana,
who is probably one of the better and more historically successful African teams. So great.
This was probably the first World Cup that I was like pumped about soccer. And I remember sitting in a theater and watching this World Cup. And it was crazy because that was the game that we beat Ghana.
Right.
And, you know, you see these highlights and videos after big time game wins and you see the crowd just like going absolutely nuts and throwing drinks and everything in the air. This was us. And so we beat Ghana. We did the unthinkable and drew against Portugal. And then we lost to Germany.
Yeah.
But that was just enough to qualify us and get us out of the knockout stage.
Yeah.
Us beating our arch nemesis in Ghana is what kind of put us into that position.
You're ready.
And then we had to face a very talented Belgium team.
Oh, yeah, that Belgium team is...
And they were really good. And they actually went to, I think they were, what, the quarters that year?
I think so. And then I think they were right at that, and maybe even made the round of eight. I think they did, again, in this last one, too.
I think so as well. And so, you know, we lost to them 2-1. And this was despite one of the best performances of an American goalkeeper ever. With Tim Howard having a record 15 saves. I mean, they were lighting us up. Shots on goal was through the roof.
That was insane.
And so, but that was, it was really exciting.
Yeah.
But then it didn't continue.
Yeah. And I think it was a lot to do with what we were already talking about, that forced culture change that Klinsmann was trying to enact. And it just seemed that after that, everyone was just really tired of hearing it. And it's a shame. Because he was right.
Yeah, and so that's when things got ugly again. Normal U.S. soccer fan
Yeah.
We placed fourth in the 2015 Gold Cup, which was our worst finish since 2000. We lost in the final of the CONCACAF Cup. And, of course, to Mexico, who we just have some bloody games
against. In the United States,
too,
which is one of the things that hadn't happened. They don't beat us in the United States. So
we finished fourth in the Copa America, which was technically our best finish ever. But then as qualification for the 2018 tourney began, the message that Klinsmann was trying to sell to us ultimately fell on deaf ears, and after the losses to Mexico, after losses to Costa Rica, Klinsmann was let go and then replaced by Bruce Arena.
Yeah.
And that wasn't popular from a lot of perspectives.
Yeah, a lot of fans were happy to see Bruce Arena come back because he was pro-MLS, you know, all that kind of stuff. But many of us who are the ardent fans, guys like you and me and a good number of our friends that do like the European professional soccer scene, we saw this as a step backwards, right? I mean, because the next thing would be to, you don't go out and get something that you've already had to fix a problem that was taking you in the right direction, but just didn't quite gel properly.
Correct. And so after this, you know, we had a record win against Honduras.
Yeah, that's
so
that new manager.
Things,
that new
things
manager
were a little
thing.
Positive. You got the draw of the new manager. We drew against Panama City. And then we bested Trinidad and Tobago 2-0, drew with Mexico 1-1 in the Estadio Azteca.
Yeah.
And then we won the 2017 Gold Cup. Yeah. You know, so Arena was doing well, but he still wasn't able to get the job done, you know, just like he was unable 2 years before, as we ultimately lost to Trinidad and Tobago and failed to qualify for the World Cup for the first time since 1986. I remember seeing those results because I wasn't able to watch the game. And
it was a gross game. It was raining like crazy.
I saw the results. And then within 20 minutes of the game, ESPN sends the wonderful announcement that the U.S. fucked it up.
And then Arena resigned, and he's been replaced by the former star, the guy who got a goal disallowed back in 2002, Greg Berhalter. So this failure was one of the last rides of that Donovan and Dempsey generation, you know, the only Altidores really, and Bradley to a degree is around sometimes. But
him and his bald head.
Yeah, me and him, he's maybe 4 inches taller than me, though. But there was one player out of that group, though, that was working his butt off, really trying to get stuff done, and you could tell was the best player on the pitch, just was unable to really, was kind of just miles ahead of the people around him. So that young dude's name was Christian Pulisic, and he became our kind of standalone young guy. Once again, it was the guy who was head and shoulders above everybody else when European experience. He'd been at Dortmund, came out of their youth academy, and had been there when Jurgen Klopp was there, was now on their first team, and everybody else in the team were just like MLSers and guys failing to make it in Europe. And that had happened with people before, Julian Green, and I mean, Dempsey in a way was like that as well. And we were kind of like, okay, well, is this going to be our next Freddie Adu, a young kid who looks great, who just can't make the cut? But I do have to say, fortunately for us, it wasn't another kind of standalone young guy who was unable to get any help from his teammates. It might be the promise of tomorrow.
Yeah, and so he didn't save the day, anything like that.
No.
But he was kind of the first of this new generation of U.S. soccer, which I think as a soccer fan and those that really follow it, you can truly get excited because you can watch this young man with Chelsea and play a style that we haven't seen in American soccer in years or really ever.
Maybe ever.
And so, you know, like we said, the generation sought to play in Europe.
Yeah.
Now the current one is.
Yeah.
And you can see our players, the U.S. men's national team, sprinkled all throughout the European continent.
Between top clubs.
You know, in the English Premier, in the Bundesliga, in Ligue 1, in, you know, all of these big-time leagues. Yeah. And they're actually playing. And I think that's what's different from this generation as to previous generations.
Mm-hmm.
We were just getting into being able to be good enough to be on a team, but not to be a starter. And Pulisic is, 21 years old?
22 now.
22 years old, and he is a starter for one of the best teams in the English Premier League of, you know, really all time, if you want to just get down to it. And he's a starter.
He's 10 years and 2 days younger than me.
Ah, man, what did we do wrong? Maybe, well, Mom, Dad, why didn't you send me to Europe when I was 15 and tell me not to come back?
Just put me on a boat back to the other country. Yes, and, I think that's a big thing, right? 22 years old. At that point, he was 19 and was being asked to carry the entire load of U.S. soccer hope. And that's tough for any young kid. But I think that it's impressive with the group that we have coming through right now. And so let's go through some of the guys that we've got and give you guys some people to look out for. So he's joined by young men such as Josh Sargent, who's playing at Werder Bremen. So that's the Bundesliga, the German league. Conrad De La Fuente, who's at Barcelona's B team. So you won't be seeing much of him, but he is on their youth team because their B team is their youth team. Former U.S. Captain Claudio Reyna's son, Gio Reyna, who is also at Borussia Dortmund. He's the new young American coming through there, so Borussia Dortmund's always a fun one to watch for that. They're also in the German league, fun about black and yellow jerseys.
And I want to challenge our fans. Yeah. If you want to have some fun and make this a really really funny topic to cover, film yourself saying these names of the teams without looking up any mnemonic help, because I want to know how many of you folks out there would say things like I would, and I don't want to spoil the fun, you know, because then I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. Yeah. But go out there and these team names and these player names, go ahead and just make a short 20-second video of you saying all of those.
Just read our U.S. national team's names nowadays, and you'll be shocked, because there's one on here that I'm literally going to leave out. No, actually, here he is. I'll give you a shot. Nicolas Giacchini. Who's at Caen? It's in the French league. And Timothy Weah is at Lille. He actually came from the PSG Academy. He's the son of the former Ballon d'Or, the best player in the world, George Weah. He's in it. And so I think he's like the...
So we're starting to get some legacies.
George Weah is like the... I think he's like a parliamentary member of the Liberian Parliament or something. It's crazy. So Timothy Weah is an American, though. So another guy, Owen Odosowi, you should check him out. He's at the Wolverhampton Wanderers. The dude is gigantic. His Instagram page it looks like a bodybuilder. And then Yunus Musa at Valencia, Tyler Adams, RB Leipzig. Leipzig's a funny story. We'll talk about that one time. They're actually owned by Red Bull, so a lot of our Americans will be coming through RB Salzburg and RB Leipzig, so look out for that. Chris Richards at Bayern Munich. And Anthony Robinson at Fulham, who he's 23. He's actually the oldest in this group. And there are two more that are of particular note. One is Weston McKennie at Juventus, who just scored an incredible goal a couple weeks ago in the Champions League. And Sergiño Dest, who is the starting right back at Barcelona. So
when you think about those three, you know, Chris Richards, McKennie, and Dest.
Yeah.
They're on three of the most well-known and most highly touted teams out there right now.
Yeah.
You know, you got Bayern Munich, who won, what, the last two Champions Leagues?
Yeah.
You've got Juventus, who was in the, you know, final few games last year in the Champions League. Barcelona has been up there for years.
Playing with the best players in the world, too.
Right.
Starting amongst the best players in the world. That's pretty good. I know Barcelona is not what it used to be or what it has been, but it's still a very good team that is able to acquire very talented players. And Dest is out there playing with Messi. And McKennie's out there playing with Ronaldo. And Richards is out there playing with all of the talented players on Bayern Munich right now. So that's pretty cool. Gio Reyna, Borussia Dortmund's a good team. There he's starting or playing a good number of minutes with them.
Wolverhampton's not bad.
Odosowi is just made his first appearance for the Wolves a couple weeks ago against Chelsea and put in an assist and beat us. So like it's if I got to get beaten by anything, a young talented American, why not? And so this is what it is, guys. This is why we're talking about all this. Is this little bit? I know we just kind of slammed you guys with a ton of names, but go back and write down some of those names. If you have some questions about who they are, their names or anything, send us a message on Facebook.
I really want to see the videos.
And we'll post up some articles that go through some of these guys as well. Send those videos in of pronunciations because it's really fun. I promise you, it'll get you laughing really hard. And
to make it more fun, after we get the first, say, three or four, I'll go ahead and give you a video of me going through it the first time.
And then we're going to do a compilation video so you can see everybody's. Not only if you give us permission. So I think that this is why we're going through all this. All that history, all of that conversation for background. Finally now we have a bunch of under 23s who are coming through right now, who are going to be our future, who are already at the level they need to be to be successful in Europe. And they're all 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. So we've got a lot of these guys for the next 10 years. So get to know them now and enjoy watching them on the international stage and also for their clubs, because America is going to continue to produce incredible young talent with this kind of system in place. We can thank Klinsmann. I know he was a hard guy to have as a coach, but he did change the culture in a successful way. And these guys are all supplemented by, also, we have to say, and some improved rosters of MLS players, as the MLS is improving, though maybe never going to be able to reach a true European standard, because a lot more of these European talents are coming over to help the U.S. improve the standard of that league, because they want to come get paid by American teams. So I think that's a big thing, right? We've got better quality overall. So it's not just about these guys playing in Europe. We do want to give a little bit of some credit to our MLS guys, who are a lot of the heart and soul of that team. But with this kind of talent being infused into the team, we're going to see a lot out of the U.S. national team in years to come.
So what you're telling me is maybe not 2022, but 2026, we have a legitimate shot of not being let down.
By 2026, I promise you all that I will have no other team that I will be pulling for in the World Cup.
That's fair.
Because now I'm still going to be like, oh, I'm going to watch in England.
Right.
Or I'm going to pull for Colombia if they make it. But like, you know, Belgium, I like watching Belgium.
Well, at least Colombia, you kind of technically are from there.
We have ties. But so maybe I'll pull for Colombia like on the low.
So
like
what?
US number one, baby, 2026.
So what does this mean now for the current fan? What this means is get excited. Start following the English Premier League, and especially because that's where you're going to see a lot of them. But just start, you know, just kind of looking at the international soccer standpoint of these players, because you're going to see them. They're going to become household names. That next USA soccer kit that you decide you want to purchase, it's not going to be the ones that you're used to. Yeah. It's going to be these new guys. You know, maybe you still get an out-the-door jersey. I wouldn't be mad at you. But
especially if you're old like us.
What we can look forward to is friendly matches start up in March. Yeah. So that's a few months away. And the way this year is gone, I mean, 2020 is over. So March will be here tomorrow.
Yeah, basically.
And so take the opportunity to find out when and who they play in March and watch them and get excited. Definitely. Because the players they will be, you know, that are on these teams, they'll be pulled away from their teams. And they'll be, you know, on international break, and they'll go play these games, and it should be fun to watch.
Absolutely. I think that we're going to have a lot of fun with this. We'll kind of keep posting videos and little news stories about the U.S. national team to kind of keep you guys in the loop. Anytime we see something cool that any of these young dudes have done, we'll try and share it through to the group on Facebook. So that would be the Drop in the Ball group at our Ladoru Facebook page, and we hope to be reaching out with another video series coming up here pretty soon. And also bring you some more podcast talent from our part.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that.
Something
in the next
like
couple
that.
Weeks.
Yeah, that's our goal. Well, we appreciate y'all for tuning in, listening up, and stay safe out there. Wash your hands, wear your mask, and you know, continue to be safe.
And download all our episodes anywhere you get podcasts.
All of them. All right, y'all. We appreciate y'all, and peace.
Later.